We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into the RotoWire NFL podcast brought to you by our friends over at WinBet. I am your host, John McKechnie, joined as always by the Honorable Mario Puig. Mario, how are you doing on this fine Thursday?
I'm soaked, John. It's pouring in Madison, or at least it started pouring in Madison right before I started to bike here. So I'm a lot heavier than, or a lot damper than I might look at a glance on the screen. I might need to throw out this chair when we're done, but other than that, I'm good. What about you?
The man is soggy. In classic internet guy form, I have not left my apartment today, so still dry.
Nice.
So at least I have that going for me, but it has been raining here in Atlanta literally all week, so it's been kind of a buzzkill, but supposed to be nice this weekend, and everyone's excited because the Braves are in the playoffs. Unfortunately, I guess they're playing your Brewers, so I'm a little torn emotionally.
They gotta go. They gotta go. Sorry, Braves.
Suppose they do, but so it goes, man. But we also have Week 5 of the NFL upon us. It gets kicked off tonight with a really good Thursday night matchup. You know, like we've had some pretty fun, interesting Thursday night games so far, but this one feels like it's of particular consequence, maybe more so than what we've seen other than that opening week Thursday nighter between the Cowboys and the Bucks, because we get treated to the Rams going up to Seattle to face the Seahawks. The Rams coming off that kind of, not necessarily a head scratcher, but a statement win for the Cardinals and a bit of a eye-opening loss, I would say, for the Rams, at least to some extent. So what do you make of that and as to how it pertains to tonight's game with the Rams hitting the road and facing a tough Seattle team?
Well, the Cardinals loss doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot for the Rams. Like, in the meantime, I guess the main takeaway I would make on that one is the Cardinals defense might be a little better than we thought, because I think everybody was right to look at that Stafford offense in the first 3 weeks and conclude, oh, this is different. They're probably better than they've ever been. That can still be true and still have a game like the one that they did against the Cardinals, especially if the Cardinals defense keeps looking as good as it has to this point. So I think they'll bounce back pretty emphatically here against the Seahawks. I think the Seahawks have a lot of real problems, and the Rams have kind of, you know, the problem of just playing in a tough division and having to deal with a team like the Cardinals. But I think that Pete Carroll is, you know, he's pretty much done, and they've shown a lot of the same problems so far this year that they've had for several years now. And they're even kind of, it's not quite the same as last year where they, you know, started hot and then got figured out in the second half. It's more like they're still doing the things, some of the same wrong things as last year, especially like, where's this tempo that they were saying they were going to play with? Like, I thought Waldron, the offensive coordinator, was supposed to have some tempo in that offense. They're moving at a crawl. They're playing like 52 snaps a game. That's crazy. So on the one hand, that you would think that would pick up just by sort of chance, even if they don't intend to. But in the meantime, they just don't really have enough firepower in their offense. And it's, doing this thing where Russell Wilson throws 30 attempts and sometimes scores three or four touchdowns. it's not sustainable. Like, eventually he's not going to be able to throw that many touchdowns in a game. And when that happens, they're just sort of dead as an offense. So I'm a little concerned about the short week for Seattle. I mean, I guess playing at home is helpful, but fact is their cornerback rotation is one of the worst in the league. Their defense, I think, is so bad in the secondary that it could kind of just fall apart as an entire group, to the point where even the run defense starts to suffer, even though they have pretty good run stopping personnel. So if this game is close, I guess I would have to think it's because Sean McVay still didn't show that much. Like, he's still thinking like, oh, well, we don't need to use the whole playbook. This is not that important of a game. But 3-1 with the divisional loss last week, I think they'll kind of not go all out, but, you know, take this game seriously and in the process cover, I think. I don't know if this line is going to move, but I think the Rams win by like at least 5.
Okay. All right. That definitely checks out. I do believe the Rams are the better side as well. And I think there's a little bit of Vegas respect for that Seattle home field baked into this line here. And when you mention that slow tempo for the Seahawks, the Rams are also relatively slow. Obviously, they've been more effective this year, but the Rams rank 26 in plays per game. So when you look at a total, that it's one of the highest on the board for this week. Do you think an under could be in play? I mean, Thursday night unders tend to be a thing anyway, but when you're asking for less than 54.5 points, it feels like that might be the way to bet this one.
Yeah, it could be. I don't really have a good sense for it, and the Thursday game detail, like you said, can make a trend for the worse for any given offense, but I just don't think this is an NFL cornerback rotation that the Seahawks have. And I think Stafford, assuming there's nothing, you know, just weird going on with him, I think Stafford should be able to play against the Seahawks defense a lot like he did against the Bears one. And which is to say, like, however much fight the Seahawks can muster, I think the Rams will just kind of respond with a bigger punch every time. And just until eventually the Seahawks like kind of don't get back up, and maybe the Rams still run it up from that point, but I don't really think it's in their nature in McVay's nature to really, you know, go full Brady Belichick on anybody. I think he likes to think he, you know, has the long game in mind.
Okay. I see what you're saying there. And then one fantasy question from this one, our friend Greg wants to know, would you start Higbee tonight or would you start Dalton Schultz this weekend?
I mean, that's a good situation to be in at tight end, especially for, you know, the acquisition costs that you had to put on those two. I wouldn't worry about either way, but I kind of assume Stafford has the better matchup here than Dak. So if I must break the tie somehow, I'll go with Higbee, but particularly with Gallup still out, Schultz probably is a pretty good play himself. And Martinez is out for the Giants. He probably wasn't a great cover linebacker anyway, so it should be a decent matchup for Schultz. I just kind of think Stafford's probably going for like 302 or 3 in this game.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, we have Schultz ranked 15th on Jeff Erickson's value meter, so it could definitely do worse than him. But I think I would personally start Higbee tonight as well. Let's get on over to the weekend. Let's go to London. We got Falcons Jets Sunday morning. A wince.
We're trying to punish Europe. Is that what this? We're trying to make them not like American football.
What else can you really take from what we've put over there? I mean, it's always bad like games.
This should be a diplomatic crisis or something. Like this should stoke war tensions between these countries. But anyway,
Boris Johnson's trousers.
I'm not going to get up early. Yes, I'm not going to get up early for this one, John. But I will say, I don't know what to make the London travel detail. But in terms of just how the teams match up, I would say the Jets are the better team, even though they look pretty bad. I mean, the Falcons, they've shown some hints of life, I guess, but not really. It's just they played other bad teams, and there's a lot of ugly in the NFL sometimes. And if you're in a lot of ugly games, you just kind of win. If it's occasionally, you know, it's like one score games are just kind of like a random result. So I don't think the Falcons are any good. I think they still have a bottom three roster, whereas the Jets are only like bottom 7 or 8 or something like that. And, you know, Zach Wilson at least last week showed if the pass rush isn't getting to him, he has a chance. And this Falcons team doesn't have a pass rush. So should be a pretty decent spot for Wilson to build on last week.
So Mario, circling back specifically to the Falcons, you and I are in a Survivor League together in Derek Van Riper's Pentathlon. Would you like to share with the class the roller coaster of emotions that you were on last Sunday, taking the Washington football team as your Survivor pick?
So I probably haven't taken this as seriously as I should. I don't budget time well, so I look at the Survivor and I just pick something. Week one, this is a two chance Survivor, to be super clear, because I took the Jaguars in week one because they could probably win a game, maybe this one. That was wrong, but I took Washington last week. It was the first one in the list, and I was like, hey, that's not bad. I'll just go with them. I forgot that I picked them long enough that I didn't really go on the roller coaster. I just checked later, and I was like, oh, that was a pretty stupid idea, huh? Oh, anyway, on to the next week. I can't use Washington anymore. It's a shame, but
oh man, yeah, I can't believe you burned that match that early. But
So the Washington defense is a mess, and I don't know what Jack Del Rio's issue is, but I would imagine Ryan looks worse against the Jets defense, even though it's not a great one in its own right.
Yeah, this one is going to be really sloppy. I think overall, I think that the London games just tend to be that way. That this one has an over under of 46. I like the under in this one. I like them in London in general. I think both these offenses are, like I said, kind of a mess. Although, I will give Wilson credit where it's due. I thought that he looked far and away the best that he's looked so far a week ago against the Titans. Yeah. That Corey Davis throw was insane.
Yeah, that was a good long range throw, and obviously he had a really difficult pass rush situation in all the prior games. So I do think he's liable to have kind of just bad rookie plays, and if that happens against even the worst NFL defense, let's just say it's the Falcons, it can still go poorly for that quarterback. But it should be at worst like a split the difference between last week and the prior 3 weeks kind of deal.
I see. And then as it pertains to Atlanta, I think one of the big fantasy storylines out of last week did come from that Washington football team Falcons game with Cordarrelle Patterson. So any thoughts on him as far as a sustainable fantasy asset that you can use in your flex moving forward, including this weekend, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a lot of people got him cheap, so some people might have an embarrassment of riches where they can't really get him on the field. But if you're not in that situation, I would say he's closer to like a must start. You know, if he's in the flex category at all, it's like must start flex kind of category. So I have no idea why Cordarrelle Patterson didn't do more before last week in his whole career. Like as far as like why a guy like him couldn't have been more effective as an NFL receiver, or at least gotten a shot earlier as kind of like the running back hybrid that the Falcons are using him. I don't understand why any of that happened. I think in hindsight, it's like maybe he was just kind of misused his whole career. And even if not, even if he's kind of just like a goofy gadget fit in this offense, like A, it seems like the role is there. And as long as that's the case, that puts him in a pretty valuable category alone. But then with the results so far this year, I think we'd sooner conclude that he's actually effective in the role and not just, some kind of fluky gimmick kind of player. It's like, this is a big fast guy who is, he's good at breaking tackles. Just he's bad at every other thing a receiver has to do. But running back, he doesn't have to do it so much. You get the good traits involved more easily in that role. And it's added up so far. I don't really know why it should change. He could be one of the absolute best pickups this year, depending on the league.
Yeah, it's been really encouraging so far. He clearly still has plenty left in the tank. Always been a super talented player. It's just been the difficulty for everywhere that he's been has been deploying him correctly. And it seems like the Falcons, oddly enough, have been the ones to figure that one out. At least
they can't do anything else right, but they've made Cordarrelle just MVP. So that's something.
Just like one of those mistake discoveries, but hey, more power to him. Let's get on over We got Patriots, Texans. This game, I hope I don't have to see much of it on Red Zone. It's pretty raunchy or pretty gnarly. You got a 39.5 point total in this one. You got the Patriots favored by anywhere between 8.5 and 9.5 points going up against this hapless Texans team that, you know, got completely dismantled by the Bills last weekend, just showed very little. You know, they basically showed what we expected them to be the entirety of the season. And it's that week one game that we were talking about against the Jaguars gets further and further in the rearview mirror. And now we have more and more sample of Houston being kind of what we thought they were. So I think the Patriots aren't very good, but I know that the Texans are really, really bad. So that this is just a tough one to kind of extrude much fantasy intrigue from.
Yeah, somebody in the New England offense should be busy. I don't know if it's going to be Jacoby Myers or Nelson Agholor, one of the tight ends, running back, don't really know. The spread is believable, though. Like, obviously, the Bills get credit for what they did on defense last week against Davis Mills, but also Davis Mills is a really bad quarterback prospect. There was no good reason at any point for the hype that there was, like people trying to you know, some media outlets trying to say, you know, he could be a first-round sleeper. No, Davis Mills is bad, and that's before you get into the fact that his knee is a time bomb. So he's really, really bad, and I think you can expect the Patriots defense to put an effort forth pretty similar to what the Bills one did. Like, we'll, especially if Bill Belichick decides he wants to confuse Davis Mills, he might decide he doesn't even need to try. Maybe they don't play that much of an aggressive game plan on defense, but I would imagine Bill Belichick still wants to make the playoffs and compete in the playoffs. They're 1-3. They have to win this game. They can't really take any competitive, you know, advantage for given. They're not good enough to really assume that, especially on the road. So I kind of like the chances of them covering, because I don't think Davis Mills can advance like really anything against a defense like this, against most defenses. So especially with the Houston defense having such bad personnel in the secondary, Mac Jones should be able to keep it together and I think kind of control the game the whole time, the, you know, all four quarters.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, essentially I see this one being like a 20-7, 20-3 type of just slog.
Yeah.
It never feels even as close as what that score might suggest. But yeah, it's just more an indictment on the Texans and what they're looking like in its current form, especially with Davis Mills back there at quarterback. Let's go on over Vikings, Lions. Vikings 9-point favorites at home. I always have a hard time trusting the Vikings with a big number, but you know, I'm starting to come around on them a little bit. Although last week was obviously that was, you know, the rock fight of the week against the Browns. Both Cousins and Baker Mayfield looked really, really bad, I thought, especially after, like, you know, the game kind of got off to a hot start with Justin Jefferson catching that early touchdown, and then it just kind of thawed out from there. So they're going up against a Lions team that let me down. I had a little bit of belief in them coming into last week's game against the Bears. I thought they might be able to get the win in Chicago, partially because I'm just that down on Chicago, or have been. That perspective has changed a little bit too. We'll get to that later. But Lions going on the road here, another divisional game going up against this Vikings team. What say you?
I think 9.5, 8, whatever the number is on the Vikings, that seems a little high to me. And it's definitely not because I think the Lions are good, especially. It's just, I don't know if I really like the Vikings to beat any team by double digit points, unless it's, you know, Falcons, Texans, Jets type team. Maybe not even the Jets, maybe just the Texans and the Falcons, I don't know. But this feels like a lot of points. Granted, I don't know what the Lions do well exactly at the moment. Like, if they can't get Swift and Hockenson going in this game, maybe the Vikings do get to 10, because the Lions defense is bad. There's nothing there. They lost Aquara with that Achilles tear, so that's really bad. Who's the best pass rusher? So, yeah, they were bad to start with. They're reeling now from that injury, especially. Don't know if they got any of their corners back yet. They might be starting that Bobby Price or whatever his name is. He was supposed to be a practice squad guy. He was not supposed to play, let alone start. So, yeah, they can't cover these receivers. They probably can't slow really either of the Vikings running backs. But I do think that the Vikings defense is pretty not bad exactly. Bad at corner, definitely. Like, their corner rotation is not very good. So if Danielle Hunter and company can't make Goff feel the heat, then those corners might not be able to cover even guys like Cephas and Khalif Raymond. Your call last week got the touchdown. And guy like him on Breshad Breeland or Patrick Peterson, really. I mean, neither of them can run at this point. So there is a way for the Lions to hurt that secondary enough that I would at least like their chance for the backdoor cover. So I'll take the Lions, especially if it's going to be a 9.5 spread for the Vikings. But Vikings should control the game.
Yeah, I'm with you there. You know, we saw that the Browns have tons of receivers running open a week ago. Mayfield just simply could not hit any of them for the life of him. Like, so many Odell touchdowns that could have been that were just...
Man, he is so lucky there's, like, Jacoby Brissett starting games, Carson Wentz starting games, because that was just... That was some of the worst quarterbacking I've seen in a really long time. I don't know why you can't... It's like he's intimidated by how good Beckham is or something, and he chokes because he's like, wow, that guy's so wide open. I better not miss this one. And then he just like psychs himself out and punts it to the other side of the field. Just brutal.
It's very, very bad. It's tough to watch. And then like he has moments like that, and then he has moments like the one where he's escaping the pocket and decides to high step for some reason.
Oh, yeah, he was going Deion Sanders on them. That was awesome. That was so good.
Incredible.
He should have, like, held the ball out, like, you know, that
loaf of bread.
Loose grip.
Oh, my God. The absolute best. Sorry for getting too close to the camera there. I was making sure that my charger was working. Anywho, let's move on over to our next game. But before we get there, we got a quick message from our sponsors over at Blue Wire.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, next up, we got Saints versus football team. Saints, 1-point favorites on the road. Saints, they kind of broke my trust, man, last week. You're at home, first game at the Superdome of the year, and you let Danny Dimes come in and beat you in overtime when you're 7.5-point favorite. I got the Saints in timeout right now. I certainly can't trust them to cover.
Yeah, I mean, the Saints are one of the most confusing teams I can remember seeing, because after week one, at least, we always have to take them seriously to some extent. Like, we know they can beat most teams. You can't really count them out the way you would teams like the Texans and Falcons. But the how to actually imagine them winning any given game is almost impossible. It's like, what do they even do? It's like every time they win a game, it's because it's just like, well, Juwan Johnson had that one play, or Deontay Harris had that one play, and that was kind of enough. Then they just sat on the ball and they won 17-10. And that could work here. I don't expect the Saints defense to look so bad 2 weeks in a row, but I guess Bradley Roby, I don't even think has played yet. I don't know what the deal is. I would have thought they could have just plugged him in, replaced Paulson Adebo right away. Maybe they do here. If Roby can play, if Lattimore is decent, that should be pretty tough. That defense can obviously be tough. They've already shown it this year. And Washington's offensive line probably isn't built to withstand a well-played, well-schemed front seven, especially well. So I don't really see them kind of like – I don't really see Antonio Gibson, like, running over people. Terry McLaurin probably has to get loose to kind of keep Washington moving the chains regularly. And I don't know what to expect as far as that goes. Like, McLaurin can beat anybody. It's just Allen is a good defensive coordinator. He probably knows that McLaurin will beat him if he doesn't come up with something. So I would expect him to try at the very least. And as long as he neutralizes McLaurin, maybe Heinicke kind of gets a little more, makes more ill-conceived throws, stuff like that. But if Washington doesn't make stupid plays, doesn't turn it over, Washington's defense. This is just so poorly coached, so poorly coordinated that Jameis does get on track in this game. I guess other quarterbacks have looked pretty good against Washington, which is, it just doesn't make any sense. I don't know how it's possible, but it's happening. And I guess until they actually look decent, we have to assume they'll always be, or at least for the short term, being not so great on defense, not anywhere near what we expected them to be anyway.
Yeah, that's been one of the bigger surprises. I feel like one of my bigger slips on a banana peel among my best ball teams is just having, like, pretty much Washington football team defense on all of them. And tough scene.
I'm shocked by it too. I don't understand how a coordinator can be so bad that he makes this team. You shouldn't need to be good. You should be able to just not even really know what you're doing.
Get out of the way. Insane. Yeah. Question for you. I've seen floating around in the Twitter discourse this week, some consternation over Alvin Kamara, of all people. You know, he hasn't scored a touchdown yet, but
right.
He also had 26 carries last week. He had 24 the week before, had 20 in the season opener. So he's getting rushing work that, like, he never has before. So how do you kind of weigh those two factors out? Because obviously Kamara has been, like, buoyed by that pass catching and that touchdown production in recent years that, you know, might not be sustainable for a replacement level player, but for a guy like Kamara, you know, you trust that he's able to find the end zone year over year, game over game. What are your thoughts on him right now?
It's a weird look that offense has had all year, and it's maybe affected Kamara more than anybody, the way it's been so, like, it's putting a lot of work on him, like you said, like, his rush attempt volume is higher than it's ever been, but they've just been so bad and lethargic that it hasn't gone anywhere, not anywhere near his historical standards anyway. So it's tough to know whether they're just kind of in for a busted year as an offense, or if Peyton can come up with a counter adjustment, if Peyton's been withholding any play concepts in the schemes to this point. I don't know if something like that can change here and get Kamara going, but the usage is high. The matchup seems fine. I mean, I don't know. I guess you'd rather attack the Washington defense by the air, but I almost want Winston to start throwing to these receivers more, because hopefully that can create some space where Kamara can run some routes, so they don't need to give him so many carries specifically. Like, if they can take six of those carries that he's had each of the past couple of weeks, turn ideally those into at least five targets, that would be a way for them to, you know, get the whole offense going a little bit. And in the meantime, you know, especially after a week like last week, it's kind of tough to feel, you can't really take, or it feels a bit of a leap to take for granted that it'll all get better, because they really could have used it getting better last week and it never happened.
Right. Yeah. Still very strange that it didn't happen a week ago. And, you know, maybe Washington eventually figures it out on defense. Maybe it happens this week at home. So yeah, that things are just, this is one of the stranger games on the slate this weekend for sure. Let's get on over. We got Dolphins, Bucks. Bucks 10-point favorites in this one at home. They return home after a couple games away, obviously going out to LA and then back to New England a week ago. An emotional win, of course, for Tom Brady and company up there in Foxborough. Now they get to face a Dolphins team that lost to Carson Wentz pretty convincingly. So, I mean, this is the Bucks again, 10-point favorites. It's a high number for any NFL team, but man, I think that the Bucks steamroll here.
Yeah, so if Jacoby Brissett is playing, I think the Buccaneers cover. I'm sure there's been someone as bad, maybe worse, as Brissett has been the last couple weeks, but or last 3 weeks. But man, I can't really confidently name anybody. Brissett just doesn't do anything, nothing good anyway, and. I don't know if there's a defense that I would say he can cover against. I don't know if it matters that the Buccaneers have all these corner injuries. I mean, it matters to some extent, I guess, but it's one of those things that matters in that it would keep maybe the Buccaneers from covering a 17-point spread. Maybe that's what the difference is. It doesn't get the Dolphins anywhere near competing because they can't throw and no one can run against the Buccaneers. So I would expect this to get pretty ugly. I think the backup Buccaneers corners are totally good enough to cover this 10 points.
So, you know, the Dolphins were a team that drew a decent amount of fantasy interest during draft season. Can you feel confident starting really any of these guys, you know, ranging from a Myles Gaskin to a Mike Gesicki to a Jalen Waddle this weekend?
No. In Waddle's case and in Parker's case, I would also say that's mostly due to Brissett. Like if Tua was out there, don't get me wrong, they'd still be a crap offense, but they would be able to move the ball at some point occasionally. Like, I don't even think that Brissett can do that. It's like with Waddle, you're hoping he has that ridiculous 18 target, 12 catch for 50 yard game, because that's the best it's going to get with Jacoby Brissett there. So I still like some of those players. The receivers are good. I think there is a way they could have had a decent offense this year, but another big problem is the Dolphins don't know what they're doing. They have no idea. There's some kind of disconnect between the front office personnel handling and Brian Flores as a coach, or maybe they're both connected, but neither knows what they're doing. Cause the whole theory of this offense is just bizarre. This thing where like they were just never going to run the ball, I guess, this year. Like they had Gaskin do a pretty good job last year. They bring in Brown to get these eight carries, you know, halfback dive kind of plays, but there's no actual like volume candidate in the backfield. And if they're not going to run, then they're kind of, I guess, going to more of like an air raid kind of philosophy, which they don't have the quarterback or offensive line personnel to do. So they're kind of, I think they came into this year without a really good plan, and whatever plan they had quickly was shown for a poor idea. And now they're just kind of mashing buttons, seeing if they can get their way out of this. And I don't think they have a prayer. I think they're just a badly run team, decent coaches as far as like on-field coaching, but don't know what the offense is supposed to be, and whatever they thought it was, it's not going to fly.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a proponent of button mashing just kind of as a lifestyle, but you know, if I'm a fan of the Dolphins, I'd prefer my coaching staff to come up with a little bit more than that.
Yeah. It seems like they just didn't, I don't know, like they overslept on the season or something and tried to put a game plan together just, I don't know, right, like 5 minutes before kickoff, and they're still working on it, and I don't think they'll catch up.
Nope, I don't think so either. And obviously the quarterback situation sets them back and just kind of like cements them like down towards the basement of the AFC East. Before we get to a message from a couple of our sponsors, quick question for you, Mario. We got a listener, Whale Dahir, asking us, would you trade Mixon for DJ Moore right now?
There's probably some teams that it would make sense for. I don't think you really want to, like, run away from Joe Mixon. Obviously, the injury's a bit concerning, but it is a low ankle, right? It's not supposed to be high. So he could be back pretty quick. And Moore, I think, will basically continue to have the season that he has. But I also think he's maybe had a bit of a best-case scenario in this first month. Like, Robbie Anderson and Terrace Marshall, whoever else, they're going to do something eventually. To the point, they've done nothing. So Moore is a really good player, and I think we both liked him going into this year, John. But I would probably need to be rich at running back and poor at receiver before I would make that move right now, even though there are probably some cases where it would make totally good sense.
Right. So, you know, if you feel good about what you'd be rolling out there running back-wise while losing Mixon, then I think that move would make some sense. Because, like you said, DJ Moore has been basically playing at that top range of outcomes so far. But I don't know. I think it could continue for a bit here. I mean, even if Robbie Anderson gets on track, it does feel like Moore is kind of like option A, option B in that passing game. And Darnold seems to be playing at a level that we haven't seen him do at the NFL level. So, again, team context important for your fantasy here, but I think I'd be down to move Mixon for DJ Moore. Before we get on to our next game, we got a message from our friends over at WinBet. If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WinBet, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WinBet is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WinBet brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. And if you want to break from sports betting, head into WinBet's digital casino. Take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WinBet is currently available in six states as Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WinBet, the possibilities are limitless. WinBet is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 with your first wager. Download WinBet right now. That's WynnBet, WinBet, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. We also got a message for our friends over at Yahoo. The new NFL season is underway, and Yahoo is excited to kick off daily fantasy football. There will be a ton of big prize contests throughout the season on Yahoo, including their multi-entry contest now being shark-free. To celebrate the beginning of football season and Yahoo Daily Fantasy becoming shark-free, Yahoo is giving all users the opportunity to claim a free $10 in contest entry credit. Users can take advantage of this free $10 contest entry credit offer to join one of Yahoo's biggest contests. In addition to the free credit, Yahoo has a $1 million DFS football contest live. The $1 million contest features $1 million in total prizes, including first place receiving $100,000 and an entry to the first ever Yahoo Fantasy Football Championship live finals event, which will occur at MGM National Harbor in Maryland this December. Play daily fantasy on Yahoo this season. Visit sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome to claim the free $10 offer to get started. Again, that's sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome. All right, Mario, moving on into Sunday's action. We got Packers, Bengals. Packers going to Cincinnati. They are 3-point favorites against the surprising 3-1 Bengals. What's your read here?
Well, the Jaire Alexander injury is a huge deal. That is probably a top, I don't know, three corner in the NFL. And Eric Stokes looks pretty good on one side, but if the Packers have to go to Kevin King or anybody really, that's a huge downgrade from Alexander. So we'll see. That defense could look all of a sudden a lot worse than it has, at least in the past defense. Going back a pretty decent amount of time, I guess, like since however long Alexander's been there now. And particularly if T. Higgins is able to go here, you would think Higgins, Chase, Boyd, that's a lot of stress for a secondary that's reeling, that already was weak on one side. Whatever side Alexander wasn't on was a side you could beat with this Packers defense. So they're really beat up. Bengals have obviously three really good receivers. I don't want to really pick the Bengals to win exactly, but I also don't want to pick the Packers to win. So I don't know. I'll be a coward and I'll say the Bengals cover, but the Packers win by like two.
Okay. I like it. And then as far as the fantasy angle for the Packers is concerned, your thoughts on AJ Dillon getting a little bit more run this past weekend and also Randall Cobb coming out of the woodwork a bit on Sunday.
Yeah. Cobb worked really well with Rodgers in that game. So maybe he keeps it going. If he does, if he's playing like last week and working with Rodgers that well, it almost doesn't really matter what the matchup is in terms of his corner matchup or whatever, because there's so much broken play kind of utility with Cobb. Him and Rodgers work really well improvising. So he can be covered initially on a play and still get open and make plays like he did last week. So I guess you have to like Cobb. Especially if Valdez is scaling back in, yeah, or what is it? Is he on IR?
I think, one of the Packers receivers went on IR.
Oh, okay. If they're playing a Lazard outside and they're creating more slot snaps for Cobb, then that should keep working. Like, I don't really think Lazard's going to draw a high volume of work. He's pretty good, but the target per snap number is definitely going to be much higher with Cobb, and it looks like he might play about as many snaps as Lazard. So that should keep going. I like AJ Dillon as a prospect, obviously. I don't really understand, though, why they took him in the second round if they weren't going to use him more than they have. So last week, a game like that was probably overdue. I think they should try to get him involved more often earlier in games because it can beat Aaron. He doesn't need them to be tired, but it would be interesting to see Aaron Jones running against a tired defense for once.
Right, exactly. So we'll see what happens there. And I feel like the Bengals defense, to their own credit, has been respectable this year. Certainly better than it was a year ago where you could pick on it completely.
Well, Logan Wilson looks really good at linebacker. And I guess
where's he from?
Logan Wyoming. Wilson, he was a third rounder from Wyoming last year.
That's right, baby.
Really good college player, specifically really – what's up?
Go Pokes, baby. Laramie, Wyoming. I want to go.
Yeah. I mean, he looks good. He's a really good coverage linebacker, especially, and he's making plays in coverage. So Green Bay does have a problem at left tackle. I guess they're still down to their third stringer, whoever that is. And that's not an easy defense going against Hubbard and Trey Hendrickson. So – it's not an easy game for the Packers. I think it could be pretty close, actually.
Okay. No, I think you make a really good case there for the Bengals. I think the casual bettor might just see the matchup and lean Rodgers, lean the Packers. But the Bengals, friskier than maybe the public is picking up on, despite their 3-1 record, that they're looking pretty solid thus far. Let's get on over to another AFC North team. One that is on the complete other end of the spectrum. One that just got beaten by both the Bengals and the Packers in recent weeks. That would be the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're at home facing off against the 3-1 Denver Broncos. You know, I hate to victory lap this early, Mario, but we were right about the Steelers.
Yeah, that was kind of an easy one to see coming because you could tell they were just sort of whistling past the graveyard, acting like Ben Roethlisberger was anything other than toast, and that the idea that like a 24th overall running back pick would somehow get them back on track. They showed just fundamentally they weren't really, you know, they weren't really on board with reality. They were just pretending things were some other way than what they actually were. And now they find themselves here, not really in a position to change anything. It feels like it could get worse. I guess it could get better. It doesn't really feel that possible, though. It feels like they're kind of maxed out on pretty much everything that they have at their disposal. And it's like they hoped that going to Matt Canada, having his slight scheme differences implemented and going back to the high volume running back, like that would all bring the Steelers offense back to what it was, you know, 10 years ago. And instead, none of that turned out to be true. They don't really have any more tricks to turn to. Roethlisberger says he's hurt. I don't really believe him. I think he adds an injury for each embarrassing game. And maybe this is it. Maybe this is the one where he finally says, like, this sucks, I quit. And, you know, goes and says, like, hey, my tum-tum really hurts. I need ice on everything right now. And put Rudolph in, put Haskins in. I don't know. Against the Broncos, it's not going to go well, whoever the quarterback is, because that defense is pretty tough. Even outside of Mile High, you would think this Denver defense will travel pretty well. And they've got as much cornerback talent as the Steelers do receiver talent. You know, the one way that the Steelers might get a little leverage on someone that they're some opponent, some defense that they're facing, it doesn't apply here. The Broncos corners probably have the advantage of anything. So it's not going to get better. And at least if Najee Harris doesn't just single-handedly carry the offense, it really can't get better. And that doesn't really seem likely.
Right. I mean, like he can carry it in the sense that, like, you know, he's getting the most touches and everything like that, but it doesn't mean he's carrying it very far.
He can't single-handedly beat a tough defense.
No, I don't think so either. Deontay Johnson having a pretty good start to his season, but, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster, not so much. And, you know, again, it all kind of starts and ends with the offensive line and Roethlisberger, and they just seem to be in deep, deep trouble. Your thoughts on, you know, the Steelers defense is still pretty good. You know, over the course of a game like last week where the offense keeps giving the ball back to Green Bay and you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, of course, you're going to eventually pay for it. Can the Broncos make the defense pay the same way this time around?
I'm not sure what I expect for this Broncos offense. And, Is Teddy out again? I don't know what.
I think he was doing like some activity earlier this week, and I think he could be cleared as soon as tomorrow, Friday.
Okay, well, if Bridgewater's in, then I think I would expect them to win this, because I think you can play just a war of attrition against the Steelers. Like, they can't really move the ball. Maybe you can't move the ball in their defense either, but you can keep it together better than Roethlisberger can. Like, you can afford to go into your shell a little bit when you have a defense like Denver's, and when you're going against a quarterback in the state that Roethlisberger's in with the kind of offensive line that he has. So I think the check down kind of quarterback, the game manager, can work for Denver in this scenario. So if Teddy can be that, I think they'll, you know, eke by. If it's Locke, that's a lot riskier, and it could go either way. Like, Locke maybe can give them more explosive possibilities than Bridgewater. Not that I really take that for a given, but even if it's true, Locke has a much greater ability to sort of just turn a play upside down, even though everything else is going well with it. So if Denver can play the kind of just, you know, Bourbon Bowl kind of thing and win here, and if Teddy can keep that together at least.
All right. I'm in on that. As well. I think we could see a conservative play style still end up winning when it comes to Denver this weekend in Pittsburgh. Got a couple other listener questions for you, Mario. Let's hear what you think. Chase Edmonds or Damian Harris this weekend in PPR, and then Zach Ertz or Max Williams?
That is a tough one. If Damian Harris is healthy, I still like Damian Harris. I don't think he's bad or anything. Been a rough couple weeks, I guess. But if he's able to go, the Patriots winning by double digits seems likely to me. I guess it all could be Mac Jones. It could be somebody else. But at least J.J. Taylor fumbled last week, right? So I think this could be a get-right spot for Harris. But if you want to go with Edmonds, I would not worry about that either. I mean, he's got a certain floor. I don't know if he can really go over that floor. I don't know if the ceiling is much different from the floor, but he at least gives you that. And admittedly, Harris has been shaky.
Was that a height joke?
What? No, I would never make a height joke. I'm listed. I have the same listed height as Edmonds, so I'm not gonna.
Yeah, I guess that makes two of us. Yeah,
less than Kyler too. So I don't appreciate that. Calling him short. thing.
Yeah,
it's not true. People who are under 5'9" are short. I'm the line.
Right there, right freaking there, man. And then, Ertz or Max Williams?
Oh yeah. Man, I was a Max truther for the longest time. So him having these couple big games this year, it mostly has me like hooting like an idiot, and like I'm back on it. And I think Ertz is like underwhelming enough that I can keep it going here and just, you know, keep the Max chant going. Admittedly, he's more likely to fall off than have like two good games in a row. It's just, I don't know. I can't really feel safe with Ertz either, personally.
Ertz, I mean, like when he's not the 1A at his position, it makes it a little bit tougher. I know we have him ranked higher than Max Williams, but I might go Max Williams myself. And yeah, I can't get the image of him hurdling those guys in that bowl game out of my head, even 6 years later, however long it's been. Let's go. We got another listener question here, and then we got to run through these games quick. DJ wants to know, quick question, 12-man PPR and have Mike Williams, Debo, and Thielen. Should I hold on to Michael Thomas until he comes back or try to sell high on one of these guys? Let's see here. I'm actually interested to hear what you say on this one, because I have Michael Thomas stashed in a bunch of spots. I don't know if I'm letting go of any of these guys, though. I think I definitely see the appeal of trying to sell high, but you're also banking on Michael Thomas being good. And the way that the Saints offense has been so far, obviously the Michael Thomas re-addition into the offense could help change things and make the overall offense a lot healthier. But I'm not banking on it so much that I'm like rushing to get rid of any of these guys. Obviously, I think I would rank Thielen probably third of this group, although Mike Williams obviously had the disappointing night on Monday, but I still trust him. What say you?
Yeah, so if you have Mike Williams and Debo, those are two clear profit receivers this year. Like, even if they don't really do that great in the second half, it's like their investors are already doing pretty well. So when you get players like that at the price you probably did when they're having years like they're having, I'm more inclined to just lock them in and consider it you gained ground on your opponents by getting these returns from these receivers for the prices you paid. And I don't think they need to do more. I think that's just an advantage you should lock in. And if Thomas comes back and looks good, you know, it might be a little bit of a traffic jam there at receiver, but if you can start three receivers and a flex, you might just have all four of them in your lineup at that point. And not to like just reason on the basis of misfortune, but Debo has a bit of an injury history. Mike Williams has a bit of an injury history. There is a chance somebody just gets hurt, misses some time. And even in that case too, you'll be glad you had Thomas. In the meantime, I'm kind of skeptical you can get what would be enough to make it worth parting with Samuel or Williams. And Thomas, his market is pretty low right now, but I would almost sooner trade Thomas than any of the others. But I also wouldn't really feel any pressure to move at all.
Yeah. I think, I'm very, very interested to see what the Michael Thomas return looks like whenever that might happen. So I hope that helps you, Dijo. Before we get on to our next group of games, we got a message from our friends over at Thrive Fantasy. Come prop up on Thrive Fantasy this season. Thrive Fantasy is a daily fantasy sports and esports app for player props. With Thrive, you can eliminate the countless hours of research and focus only on the top tier athletes that have the biggest impact on the game. Will they go over or under their projected stat totals? Choose 10 of the 20 available player props to build your lineup. Each prop is assigned a fantasy value for both the over and the under based on how likely it is to hit. Hit the most props and rack up the most points to win a share of the prize pool. Thrive has a free $1,000 NFL Week 5 RotoWire contest for RotoWire supporters. Use promo code RotoWire when you sign up, and you will also receive a 100% instant first deposit match up to $100. Download Thrive Fantasy on the iOS App Store or Google Play Store, or sign up by visiting www.thrivefantasy.com. Get in on the action and prop up today. All right, Mario, we got a bunch of games to run through here, so we'll hit these quick. Eagles, Panthers, 3-point favorites in this one. Eagles didn't look as big of a disaster last week as they did, obviously, that Monday nighter against Dallas. But I think the Chiefs kind of were a little bit passive on defense in that one and allowed the Eagles to move the ball a decent bit. I don't know if the Panthers are going to be so amenable, and that this one is at home for the Panthers. So that line feels low to me. I feel like the Panthers should take control of this one.
Yeah, I didn't expect Jalen Hurts to have the passing volume that he did last week, so I could be wrong again here. But I hate the matchup for him, and he's doing some things well, but I worry about this pass rush. I think Burns is on a level that people haven't quite noticed yet, and he can be a game wrecker, in my opinion.
I think so, too. And then, I guess, you know, the fantasy wrinkle here, what do you do with Chuba Hubbard?
I think you keep him active if you paid to acquire him, or in most cases anyway, because it'd be one thing if you just picked him in the last round and he's just your running back five. It's like, you don't, that person doesn't really need to think too much about Hubbard, in my opinion. But if you picked him up, then you presumably did it for the reason of deploying him now. And if not now, there was never a reason to bid on him.
Yep. Absolutely. I think that's a great way of framing it. Titans, 4-point favorites on the road after having lost as the touchdown favorites to the Jets. I think the Titans stink, but I mean, I don't know. Maybe if they get some receiver personnel back, maybe it's better. But I mean, the Jaguars are obviously a complete mess. And, you know, Urban Meyer,
Bobby Petrino is like, this is bad.
Your podium game is trash. Yeah.
Yeah.
At least wear a neck brace.
Yeah, at least get in an embarrassing but gnarly and cool accident.
with
Cayman, Nebraska. But anyway, I think this is the just about the weirdest team situation I think we'll ever see. Really thought it was going to be the Houston Texans, the 2021 Deshaun Watson Houston Texans. I thought that was going to be the weirdest story ever. But Urban Meyer had to get in front of them, had to get a lead, and just the most absurd storyline possible. It can't be good for the focus of the Jags. I don't know how they're even conducting like basic team operations right now. So I think lowly of the Titans generally, and certainly I don't think Vrabel's very good, but I think they should win just almost by default and probably by more than 4 points.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably right. As much as I like to bag on the Titans right now.
How about Jeremy McNichols? Finally, Max Williams and Jeremy McNichols. It only took until 2021 for the truth to come out.
It's all coming together, boys. Yeah. How much Derrick Henry are you using in DFS this week?
I guess you really got to think about it, because the matchup is great and Tennessee is desperate. Mike Vrabel is desperate right now. He can't really take this game that lightly. He might want to run it up just to create the feeling of like, hey, we're still a good team, you guys. Because right now the Titans know they're not very good. And if they don't clobber the Jags, they'll be even more sure yet.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. So yeah, the Titans might be compelled to really kind of rub this one in. And I think the Jaguars can, of course, let that happen. Bears, Raiders. Raiders, 5.5-point favorites in this one. Raiders came back down to earth a little bit on Monday night, and the Bears showed some life, I thought, last Sunday, albeit against the Detroit Lions, and they were at home. But, you know, that makes for an interesting matchup in the sense that, you know, these two teams just kind of bucked their early season trends that were starting to form just a week ago. So it's a question of, like, what do you make of that compared to what they had been previously, and how do you apply it to this week?
Yeah, so on the one hand, 5.5 points is, feels like a lot for the Raiders. On the other, I don't know if I really believe in the Bears' offense a whole lot. The Montgomery injury, of course, can't really help. But Justin Fields, yeah, he looked better last week. But these conditions, the playing against the Raiders' defense in general is more like playing the Browns' defense than the Lions' one. And specifically, that edge-rushing problem that was so crippling against the Browns. There's no Myles Garrett here, but Max Crosby's really good. Yannick Ngakoue is really good. They're causing problems, probably getting more pressure than their sack count would lead you to believe at a glance. And this team still, the Bears still have Jason Peters at left tackle. So I'm a little worried for Justin Fields. think he's a good prospect and everything, but I don't think he's got a great offensive line situation. And I think if you have a bad offensive line situation, it tends to show up against a team like the Raiders.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, that's going to be an issue, no doubt. And I think this Raiders offense is definitely not. Ooh, we got a breaking news here before we sign off. Looks like from Adam Schefter, a note on Calvin Ridley. One second, bear with me here, folks. Falcons receiver Calvin Ridley is not making the trip to London due to a personal matter, Woo-hoo! And he is out for Sunday's game against the Jets.
Yeah,
that's
right. I've got a lot of Calvin Ridley.
me too. That's I have a decent amount of Kyle Pitts too, but I don't know.
Well, maybe he'll get 14 targets now and it'll be okay. I don't know. I still do like Kyle Pitts. I know last week was disappointing and games like last week will happen, but and he's getting a good share. The problem is the team is just so destroyed, that and Cordarrelle Patterson apparently.
Yeah Cordarrelle just the ultimate undoer.
Cordarrelle for like 204 touchdowns now.
That's the ticket. There it is. All right, we got a handful of games left to run through here, so let's go quick. We got Browns Chargers. Chargers anywhere between 1 point favorites and 2.5 point favorites in this one, going up against the Browns. Where are you with this one?
Chargers are the real deal. The Browns are just kind of a good wild card team, in my opinion. And Baker can't play when there's any stress or when his receivers are open, apparently. So I think Herbert is a level or two above, and it shows up. The Chargers get it.
Yeah, that drive to kind of shut down the Raiders' momentum swing on Monday night was really impressive from Herbert.
Yeah, Herbert's locked in. He's really, really good.
Yeah, he's a beast. Cards, 49ers. Cards, 5-point favorites at home against the Niners. Trey Lance looking like he'll be the guy. What say you?
It's a dangerous spot for Lance, both because it's on the road and it's because it's this particular defense. They're tough to read. They're huge. They're fast, especially the front seven. They can do a lot of stuff before the snap that doesn't look like the result after the snap that you would expect. It could get pretty bad here, in my opinion, for Lance. So I like Lance long term. I think they should have started him in week one, but you always worried about this game, if so. And I would take the Cardinals to, I don't know, I guess a touchdown or more.
Yeah, the Cardinals are definitely playing at an extremely high level right now. So that going up against a rookie quarterback, that makes me lean Cards. Cowboys, Giants. Cowboys giving 7 at home against, you know, a Giants team that obviously just got the kind of out of nowhere win a week ago.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel Jones is playing pretty well. I don't know if I trust Dallas for 7 points, but I do like their offense the way it looks. I think they're showing some pretty good, some good ideas. They're being pragmatic and varied from week to week, doing a good job giving new looks. And when you're doing that and you got a quarterback like Dak, you should pretty easily win a game like this. But I have to think Jones is one of the most dangerous quarterbacks for the backdoor cover, if not anything else. Like he's just chucking the ball, you know, he's doing crazy stuff.
Yeah, he's good on the road too. So yeah, his career road numbers definitely solid. So yeah, I kind of like the Giants to cover this big number. Last game on Sunday to get to before we jump out of here. Maybe the game of the weekend, obviously. AFC Championship rematch. We got the Chiefs playing host to the Buffalo Bills. What happens in this one?
Mahomes will be good. I guess the question is what Allen does, and I'm still worried about him. He's clearly lost something that he had last year, and now it's up to Dable and Allen to try to counter-adjust. Maybe they do it here, but Arrowhead usually isn't the place that your struggling passing game gets on track. So I don't know. I think the Chiefs cover. Maybe the over hits though.
Yeah, it's a high over 56.5, but you know, we got you know, all the AFC talent going in this one. And, you know, Tyreek Hill gets on track last week. CEH has had a couple good weeks in a row. You know, maybe Travis Kelce can exploit something in the secondary as well. So I tend to lean on the Chiefs in this one as well. That's going to wrap things up for this edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast brought to you by our friends over at WinBet. For Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for listening.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.